6 weeks ago, Kansas City police shot to death military veteran Isaac Sims at his home. In the wake of all the questions about waiting lists at VA hospitals around the country, Sims' case has triggered a rash of questions, including why he didn't get help for PTSD at the Kansas City VA hospital and why police shot him to death to begin with. We'll talk about all of this morning with a great panel of guests. With us is Judge Artie Bland. He's with the Veterans Treatment Court here in Kansas City. Judge, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Good morning.
David Vondrely is back. He's editor-at-large for Time Magazine. How are you, David?
Good, Steve.
David Strother is also here. He's a primary therapist in the STAR Wellness Program at the Research Psychiatric Center. He's also a veteran of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And David, nice to have you, too. Welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, David Vondrely, who was Isaac Sims, and why did Kansas City police open fire on him over Memorial Day weekend?
Isaac Sims was a young soldier, grew up on the east side of Kansas City. He had deployed to Iraq twice and was an outstanding soldier, was promoted from specialist to sergeant. He saw some serious combat in Iraq and was clearly traumatized by that. After his second deployment, he came home, I think, in 2012, if I have the timeline right, and his life fell apart. He showed more and more symptoms of PTSD. His relationship with his wife became violent, and I think that is what landed him in Judge Bland's court, where the judge took steps to try to get him into the psychiatric treatment that he needed. Unfortunately, the VA hospital was overbooked. They didn't have a bed for him.
As so many are around the country.
Around the country. There's a lot of demand for this, as David and the judge can talk about. He couldn't wait the 30 days that they said that he needed. He snapped, began brandishing weapons inside his house, at his father, at a friend. This escalated. There were shots fired. The police were called. They evacuated the neighborhood. And after a standoff, Sergeant Sims leveled a weapon at the SWAT team, and he was shot dead.
And David Vondrely, I gather that this case involving Sergeant Sims, he could be a poster child for this ongoing controversy surrounding the VA and waiting lists and this country's struggle to come to terms with how it treats its returning soldiers.
That's definitely the way it looks to me. Mm-hmm. There's no question that his behavior was a danger to himself and to his neighborhood. There's some issues about questions about whether the police took used too much force. That's easy for us to say who weren't there. But the fact that he found himself in this situation is not unique to him. We've sent thousands and thousands of young people over to fight this long war, and we are not, it seems to me, providing them with the support they need back here stateside.
You know, Judge, as you look back on this case, I'm wondering how much frustration is sort of wrapped around it for someone like yourself.
Frustration is probably the best word for all of us that are involved, because it's something that we constantly work on. We try to provide a program that will allow them to be treated for their illness, which is many times very obvious when they first come in. But there's, as we talked about even before we came in, the difficulty is getting them connected, because there are several gaps in the system to making sure that they get treated. And you just can't hold a person in jail indefinitely until a bed opens up or a treatment facility opens up. And the interesting thing is, it seems like there's new facilities or new programs popping up all the time. There's just not enough room given the public resources that we have.
And when he came into your courtroom, Sergeant Sims, you ordered what for him exactly?
We ordered him for an initial assessment for the court itself, an initial assessment for our veterans treatment program. And at the end of those assessments, it was determined that he essentially needed mental health treatment for PTSD and also substance abuse treatment at that time.
And he couldn't get in to get treatment for those things, at least right away.
Not right away, is my understanding of it. We'd released him initially after a few days of to get him sober. We held him a few days to get him sober so that we could have a conversation with him about it. We released him to try to get treatment on his own. I'm not sure exactly what happened at that point. He didn't receive it. He was then arrested again.
Yeah.
Shortly thereafter, we released him to his mother in an attempt to get treatment for him. He wasn't able to establish that treatment at that time. And then he was arrested again. And the following time, I released him directly to his attorney, who then took him directly, I believe, to the VA. And from that point, it gets a little cloudy to me as to exactly what happened.
David Strother, again, you're with the Star Wellness Program at Research Psychiatric Center. I'm guessing you've seen this story several times.
You know what, Steve? It plays out in a myriad of different ways. What we've seen where our program is, we're able to, because we're dealing with active duty population, we're able to get them before they get out and they have that disconnect. You know, PTSD shows itself in a lot of different ways. And when you're talking about Isaac and his alcohol abuse, sometimes it's couched in mm-hmm. another diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's how you're coping with it. You know, PTSD starts with, you know, what we like to determine as three classes of symptoms. You have your hyperarousal, which is that startle reflex and where you see the anger. And, you know, you have people who are hypervigilant, you know, a lot of the times. You have that avoidance piece, where they don't want to re-experience whatever that trauma was.
Yeah.
So they end up coping with substances and going down a road where then that looks like it's the primary problem. And you also have that re-experiencing. What we like to colloquially term flashbacks, that comes in a lot of different ways. It's not always movie quality. You're back in war. Sometimes you're going past Gates Barbecue and that reminds you of burning flesh.
Hmm.
You know, sometimes you're driving under an underpass and you think about being on the road in Iraq. And no one's around telling these soldiers what those signs are like, what they're looking for at times. And there is, like Judge said, there is a huge disconnect between the resources that are available and getting them involved with them.
You know, you get a sense, David Strother, you know, that this notion that when soldiers return, that some suffer from PTSD, and yet you read more recently that the percentage of soldiers suffering from PTSD is now thought to be far, far greater than most of us have come to believe. Do I have that right?
Yes, there is, as far as diagnosis, there's a couple of things that happen. You know, with the timeline, as far as diagnostic statistic manual or DSM, what we go by, there is a 4-week period where if you've experienced trauma, you'll get acute stress disorder. And we're okay, so we think, with dealing with it for 4 weeks. But after that month goes by, then that's when we get into the realm of PTSD. Well, a lot of people at that time frame, they're just coming back. You just get back in country after being away on a year deployment. That first month goes pretty quickly for you. You're trying to reintegrate into your family. You haven't dealt with the losses that you've sustained. You have no one that you've really talked to.
Mm-hmm.
You may cope with it with alcohol abuse. You may, but by the time we get to a point where we can actually diagnose, they may have been on their next deployment.
Wow. David Von Drehle, as you look again at the Isaac Sims case, if you had to point to one moment where the system began to sort of falter and fall apart, you would point to what here?
Well, I think where this starts going wrong is in the failure of the military to alert these young men to this is what you're likely to experience or you might experience, these warning signs that David was talking about.
Talking to them about this early on.
Right. When they're not, when their lives are not falling apart, you know, the judge talked about how much mystery there is in this Isaac Sims case, exactly how it happened. It's his life had become very chaotic by the time we sort of dial into it. And it is hard to tell which piece of it was his inhalant abuse, which piece of it was a dysfunctional family, but that's too late. Somebody should have said to him when he was the squared away Sergeant Sims, look, this is normal. It happens to good soldiers, not just to the weaklings or the cowards or the shell shock, all the kind of things that we've said about warriors in the past. This is the normal experience, and you need to watch out for it. And when it happens, get help early. There's help there. I think the military is working on this. The fact that David's dealing with so many active duty service members is good news, but they've still got a ways to go, because so many of these young people come home thinking that they're supposed to be tough and they should be able to deal with it.
Judge Artie Bland, hop in here. Just on what David Vondrelli just said, you would say what to that?
I would say that he's exactly right. One of the things that we found that's so significant about this population is they're trained to be tough. And many times, as a soldier, the mentality is, hey, a good soldier weathers any storm.
Well, that's what they're trained to be, right? That's what the whole thing is.
But in society, when you come back, that's the very thing I think that destroys them, because they come back. Many of them are separated from the military, from their buddies, from everything that they've known. And then they're out there trying to deal with it on an island by themselves. Mm-hmm. However, in civilian life, no man is an island. But when they come into our program, we literally spend the first, maybe I'd say 90 days of our program, developing a relationship with each veteran so that they trust us enough to realize that we're part of their team to try to help them get the treatment that they need.
Yeah, yeah.
And many times that first 90 days is so crucial with us being able to establish a relationship that they understand that the court is not here to just punish them, but we're here to try to give them a helping hand towards treatment. And it's such a difficult task, because they believe I'm here by myself. And I think that's one of the reasons why our program has been effective, is because when they come in, we team them up with military mentors who can then help them to realize, hey,
and face reality.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. You're here. Let's be honest about some things. This is a problem. These things are problems for you. This court, this team is not here to try to hurt you, but they're really here to try to help you get the treatment so you can be a better civilian.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about the tragic case of Sergeant Isaac Sims, shot to death 6 weeks ago by Kansas City police following a standoff at his home. Judge Sims, when you offered this help to Sergeant Sims and said, go to the VA, get help for PTSD and some other issues, and he couldn't get in right away, is there a bell that goes off in the back of your mind thinking, this isn't good, he needs to be there now, that waiting 6 weeks or 2 months or 3 months isn't going to be a good thing here? Do you have a forewarning of bad things to come?
Yeah, it's generally a really dangerous situation, and I keep referring to the first 90 days. The first 90 days of a veteran that's coming into our program or even into our court system is really significant, because if you can't get them to connect it to those services right away, then it expands the time period. And many of them, by the time they come into contact with law enforcement, their life is already spiraling out of control. And so if you're not able to get them to treatment, the medication or the substance abuse treatment or counseling or whatever they need right away, then they start picking up more cases and more cases. And before you know it, you've kind of lost them. And when we get them, they're usually at the lowest point.
David Strother, hop onto this, because I gather what the judge is saying here you would agree with, and that begins to speak volumes about exactly where our system is falling short, despite all the rhetoric we hear from politicians saying, yes, we are going to take care of our returning heroes when they get back to our shores, no question about it. But we're not, though, right?
Yes, sir. And the perspective is a little bit different because we're dealing with active duty in the STAR program. But what we see is a lot of what Judge is talking about. We see a lot of patients that get to us because of punitive measures or maybe things that fell apart in their lives. And then they're identified and then they go to behavioral health and then they make it to our program. The problem is an educational piece. What we spend most of our time doing, and we use many different treatment modalities, cognitive processing therapy, exposure therapy, dialectical behavior therapy. We do so many different things, but what...
Someday explain all that stuff to me, okay?
Afterwards. Afterwards, Steve. We'll spend time. And I'll give you my card as well.
I'm going to need it.
Yeah. Well, but what I find the most reassuring part is, A, I have automatic buy-in as a Marine, as someone who spent time in Afghanistan during, you know, OEF-1. They already see me as a part of their peer group.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they get there, the story that keeps coming up is, I just felt so alone. You know, I felt like no one was listening. And then they look across and they see a guy that works in the chow hall that they've passed three or four times. They see a major who's their CO. They get to see that these connections, that stigma that's so firmly entrenched, can be fought.
Yeah.
And they open up, and our program is very successful. Our recidivism rate is very low, and we do a good job, a great job of getting them back there. So there is, and that's in part and parcel with the military. There is a lot of rhetoric, but the military is what's funding this, what's sending them to us, but they have to be identified.
Judge Bland, the other positive thing here, it seems to me, is just the fact that you're sitting here as the judge of something called a veterans court, which is going to be new to a lot of our listeners. How long have they been around, and what do you all do exactly?
Well, the first veterans treatment court was started by Judge Russell in Buffalo, New York in 2008.
So pretty recently.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There, and we started our court in August of 2009, about a year after that court got started. And so we were probably among the first 50 or so courts in the nation of its kind. And we're one of the first 10 to receive the national training for veterans treatment courts. And essentially what we do is we identify at-risk veterans that are in the community that are, for the most part, receiving cases in our city, many all different kinds, domestic violence, stealing, trespassing, vagrancy, I mean, just any of a number of charges. And then we identify those individuals. We try to pull together their cases. And then we assess and find out what are their specific needs. Some of their needs are homelessness. Some of them need medical attention. Some of them need substance abuse treatment, mental health treatment. And then our process is to try to get them that treatment so that we can stop those offenses from occurring and reoccurring.
David Bond Riley from Time Magazine, that's all good, but still we're left, maybe a final point here, with this lingering tragedy involving Isaac Sims.
Yes, and it's caught the attention of Kansas City, but it's not the only example of its kind. You could go to just about any police department or any veterans gathering in America and use the expression suicide by cop, and everybody there would know what you're talking about. These are tragically common cases. And the last point I'd want to make is that this, while these kind of symptoms are common in every war, the war that has gone on over the past 10 years has been unique. It is the enemy don't wear uniforms. You are constantly at the battlefront. Combat is as close as your mess hall. It can be in the middle of town. You can be driving along on a sunny day and your car blows up. There's no clear beginning and no clear end. And all of this creates a trauma that is unique, and that we owe it to these people to do a better job of helping them through it.
We're going to leave our conversation right there. That's the voice of Time Magazine's David Von Dreyle. Judge Artie Bland from the Veterans Treatment Court was also here. David Strother, primary therapist at the STAR Wellness Program at the Research Psychiatric Center. Thank you all so much for coming. An important conversation to have.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.